Good morning, good morning. There's loads of new faces here. So my name is Sophie, and I am one of the people that comes here, obviously. And you're really, really welcome. You're grand. Hi. The kids, just Bethway. So this morning, this is a topic I've been thinking about for a really long time. The title of my talk is called The Intricate Thoughts of an Intimate God. And it's based on Psalm 139. And where it really comes from for me is I've had these verses stuck in my head for months now, and it's how precious to me are your thoughts, O God, how vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I am still with you. And I love those verses, and I've just become a bit obsessed with them, and every time I'm worried about something, that's what I come back to. And this morning I really want to talk about knowing God so well that you know his thoughts. Because that's a life that we're called to, which is a really, really intimate place with God. And for me, when I think about when I was a kid, I had the blessing of being raised by really great parents. And I remember I was the youngest of five, so I never got a lot of time on my own. But first thing in the morning, from as early as I can remember, so maybe two or three, I used to get up before everybody else, and I would like potter down in my little Jimmy Jams down to the sitting room. And we used to have this like red chair. They don't make them now, I don't think. It was basically a big piece of foam in the shape of a chair, and which is a terrible explanation. But basically, it didn't have four legs the way chairs would have now. So you know when kids rock on chairs now, it's really dangerous because you think they're going to like crack their heads open, which I also did, but not on this chair. So this was like a big piece of foam. So basically, what I used to do, which sounds insane now, was I would sit on the chair and throw myself back as hard as possible, and the chair would like tip back and then slam back down again. And I would do this repeatedly, like a crazy person, for like half an hour, and literally this like mad rocking motion. So I don't know how I didn't wake my entire family up, but anyway, I used to do that and sing at the top of my lungs as a little person. And again, I've no idea how no one ever gave out to me. But the songs I used to sing were the songs that my mum would sing to me at night before I fell asleep. And my mum used to sing me really lovely songs like, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong, they are weak, but he is strong. So I would wake up every morning singing the songs that had been sung over me the night before, which is such a treasure to have and to grow up in. And as I make up songs now, I made up songs then as a little person. And I'd always do that. And for me, they are such precious memories because I grew up in the intimacy of knowing God and of knowing the thoughts of God and knowing the truth of who God was in my life. And it's one of the reasons I teach kids, because that is such a gift. There's nothing in the world better to give to a child than knowing that. So that's what I want to talk about this morning. It's David, who's such a well-known character, was a man who from a small boy grew up hearing the thoughts of God. That's a bit of a terrifying noise. Okay, I'm sure they're fine. He knew God from a tiny age. So we always talk about David as a shepherd, but what I like to envision is when I was a teenager, I got to go to Israel, and we were driving one night through the desert, and all around us were these big mountains, and above us, the sky was so clear, and I've never seen stars like it, and it was so incredibly beautiful. And these verses make me think of David sitting out there with all his sheep and just staring up at the sky saying, how precious to me are your thoughts, O God, how vast is the sum of them. Do you ever get that feeling when you're looking at the stars in the sky and you go, oh my goodness, I'm so tiny and the universe around me is so incredible. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. So I like to think that he looks at each of the stars and thinks, these are little thoughts of God, like little treasures up there in the sky. And he thinks, even as he falls asleep at night, thinking of how precious God's thoughts are towards him, he says, I awake and I am still with you. And that's what my childhood was for me in a lot of ways. I knew I'd fall asleep with God and I'd wake up with him. And that's where I want to get at today, and how we do that now, because it's never too late to have that kind of relationship with God, and it's never too late to be like a small child and just kind of wonder at him. So what I want to do is, if you're comfortable with this, I'm not going to do anything too crazy, I would like to get you to close your eyes. You don't have to, if that's totally weird. And I'm going to read Psalm 139, but I'm going to read it to you as if God was speaking to you, as opposed to David speaking to God. Okay, so it says, I have searched you and known you. I know when you sit down and when you rise up. I discern your thoughts from afar. I search out your path and your lying down, and I am acquainted with all your ways. Even before a word is on your tongue, behold, I know it altogether. I hem you in behind and before, and I lay my hand upon you. Such knowledge is far too wonderful for you. It's so high that you can't attain it. Where shall you go from my spirit? Where shall you flee from my presence? If you ascend to heaven, I am there. If you make your bed in Sheol, I am there. If you take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there my hand shall lead you, and my right hand shall hold you. If you say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to me. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with me. For I formed your inward parts. I knitted you together in your mother's womb. Praise me, for you are fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are my works. Your soul knows it very well. Your frame was not hidden from me when you were being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. My eyes saw your unformed substance. In my book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for you, when as yet there were none. How precious to you are my thoughts. How vast is the sum of them. If you would count them, they are more than the sand. You awake, and I am still with you. Oh, that I would slay the wicked. Men of blood depart from you. They speak against me with malicious intent. My enemies take my name in vain. Do you not hate those who hate me? Do you not loathe those who rise up against me? You hate them with complete hatred. You count them my enemies. I search you and I know your heart. Try me and know my thoughts and see if there be any grievous way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. So let's just pray really quickly. Father God, I just pray that this morning, Lord, there'd be just a real sense of your presence, Lord, that we would learn how to listen to you, how to know you, how to taste of your goodness, Father, that we would know that your thoughts are continuously on us, as Gary prayed, Lord, that you would just bless every person in here, Lord, that they would know an intimate God who knows everything about them. Lord, I just pray that you would be glorified this morning. So I love the first verse, so I'm just going to start from the beginning because that's always a good place to go. You've searched me and known me. Why does God speak in the past tense? Because he is outside of time, that he is a God of the past, present, and future. He already knows what's going to happen. So, you know, people always talk about a concept called predestination. So it's the idea that, you know, God specifically picked one person. He was like, well, that's the person I like, and they're going to end up in heaven with me. But the concept of what we're really trying to get at is God has known every day that has come and gone and will be. He knows every decision you're going to make. So he does actually know who is going to be with him in glory. And that's quite scary. He already knows the decisions, good or bad, that I make. But the flip side of that is God has a massive tragedy in that he knows every person who's not going to pick him. He's like the guy that gets engaged and is about to get married, but he knows the person's not going to turn up on the day. I can't imagine what that would be like. It would be really heartbreaking. And this is what God has to live in, because he knows everything that'll ever happen. So when he says he's searched you and he's known you, you don't get any closer than that. He knows everything about you. I don't know about you guys, but every time I go through security in the airport, I for some reason look like someone that's going to, like, I don't know, detonate a bomb. So I just walk through with my arms out because I'm going to get patted down by someone. Like, always. I have no idea why. I've got to stop carrying tweezers. But every time I go through and they like pat you down and they search you, but I know that I haven't got anything on me, so I'm fine and I'm not worried about it. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Whereas if you know you've got something on you, you're like freaking out and being like, uh-oh, they're gonna catch me, this isn't good. So God being a God that searches you out and knows you is either an amazing thing and you're like, no worries, or it's a terrifying thing because he knows everything about you. You can't hide anything from him. So that's either going to be a comforting thing today or it's not. The good thing is he searches you out, he knows you, so you might as well show him things, bring him things right away rather than trying to cover them up. And I love the line, he discerns our thoughts from afar. Right now I feel like I can discern Patrice's thoughts from afar, but I have, my sister and I, Anna Joy, are like freakishly alike, and I just have to look at her and I know exactly what she's thinking. Most of the time it's something really inappropriate and we get in trouble for laughing at things we shouldn't laugh at. But that's how well I know her, because we spend so much time together. But that's how God is with us. He knows exactly what you're thinking. Which is also, I think, unfortunate for God, because he has to hear a lot of things I'm sure he doesn't want to hear. It says that he knows the words on our tongue before we even say them, or the words that we don't end up saying. He knows, he's heard them. He also recognizes our patterns of behavior, which I think is a really interesting thing. I have a friend, and she has a very recognizable pattern of behavior. If I say, how are you? And she says, I'm fine, I'm good, it's all G. I know that she's having the worst day in the world. That's like her code. And we all know them. Like, I'm sure Patrice knows a million things that Rob does. That is just a pattern over and over again. And God is that way with us. He knows our ways and how we get stuck in our ways. Because our ways need to become his ways often. Where am I going with this? Sorry. So then we get to the verses, which are amazing. You hem me in. 1 second, let me flick back to find the actual verse. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand on me. I had to Google what hemming is, because I don't sew. but it turns out that hemming, which I'm sure everybody else knows, is essentially creating a border on clothes. So when it says that you hem me in, God creates a border around us, behind us and before us. But he not only creates this border, but he's obviously standing so close in that border that his hand is literally on your shoulder. And if you think about someone standing that close to you, if their hand is on your shoulder, one, you can hear what they're saying. Two, you can see what they can see. You can feel what they can feel. You can feel their breath on your face. That's how close you are to them. That's how close God calls us to be with him, that you can see everything from his point of view, that you can hear his very thoughts. And it's kind of amazing to think that that's how close God wants to stand with you. And the other thing is that that's how safe he wants to keep you. Borders are there for a reason. It's to keep you safe. If you go outside those borders, you take your life into your own hands. It's personally a place I don't want to be. I don't want to be in a place where I'm responsible for my own life. I'd rather be in a place where God is responsible for my life. So if he's created borders for me, it means anything that comes against me, God is with me in it. So whether that's good or bad, God is in it with me, which is a pretty safe place, I think. And then we get on to the great verses, where shall I go from your spirit? And that's, again, one of those comforting or terrifying things. Either it's the best thing in the world, I can't go anywhere and get rid of you, I'm like stuck with you, or it's the worst thing in the world, I can't outrun you, I can't disappear, you're still going to be there. And it goes on to say, surely the darkness shall come, that David basically questions, and he says, surely the darkness shall come, or shall cover me, and the light about me be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you, the night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. I think what David is really saying is, even in places that seem dark, they're not dark to God. a few months ago, I got to go visit a friend of mine who works in India, and she works with men and women who are in prison or their partners are in prison and that kind of stuff. And she brought me to visit a women's prison, which was I thought it was really interesting. And you go into prisons in India are a bit different than ours here. So I went, and being a Caucasian woman anyway, going into an Indian prison is a bit strange. So you had to go through these massive, I've never seen doors quite like it, these huge doors into this first layer of security, which was basically just a bunch of soldiers kind of standing around. And they wanted to kind of go through our bags and all that kind of stuff. And we bribed them with biscuits, which I thought was really weird. Because apparently if you just give them biscuits, they're delighted with life. And I don't know, it was very strange. Literally these huge men would come over to you and stand there with their hands out and you're can you not afford biscuits? No. So strange. But anyway, so my friend had asked me to teach these women how to make a craft, and I can't make crafts to save my life, so this sounded awful to me, but I thought I'd do it anyway. So we went into a prison with a bunch of scissors, which I didn't think through at all. Obviously, they're not going to let you take scissors into a prison. But they amazingly did. They were we'll just count your scissors in and count them back and make sure you don't take your eyes off the scissors. So we went into a prison with 9 pairs of scissors, huge scissors. But anyway, so we went in and I taught all these women who didn't speak a tap of English, and I don't speak a tap of the 10 different languages they spoke, how to make kites. Which, again, why would you ever think of making kites in a courtyard where there's no wind in 40 degree heat? Where are they gonna fly a kite? Anyway, amazingly, they were all very creative, and I had these women who were some of them were really quite elderly, running up and down a courtyard to try to create their own wind and fly a kite, which sort of worked. But at least it made them laugh because it was so ridiculous that I tried to make them fly a kite in dead heat. But anyway. But what they were all really interested in actually wasn't really, obviously, that we were making terrible crafts with them, but it was that we were spending time with them, and a lot of them were really interested in hearing about God, which is amazing, because there's a lot of persecution against Christians in India and a lot of discrimination, and I know my friend hasn't been able to live in certain places because landlords won't take them because they're Christians. So what is amazing is that these people were so hungry to hear about God. And so I got to even though we weren't speaking the same language, they would all come up to you in a queue and get you to pray for them. So I was okay. And they had little children with them, which I personally find it awful to think of a 6-year-old growing up in a prison. Obviously they're with their parents, so it's good for them to be with their parents, but it's quite heartbreaking seeing someone so small in a prison. Through no fault of their own. So their mums would come, and I remember one woman in particular, you could tell how heartbroken she was having her little one there with her, who just didn't know they were in a prison. You know, the amazing thing about kids is they're just at home, so they're running around and they're happy, and he was playing with a kite. so he was fine. But God makes places which we consider dark into light. And my friend she goes there every week once a month to work with these women. And they love her. They love her to bits because she turns up every month and she's very faithful to them. And she teaches them about hope and that God loves them. And it's so different from anything else that they're hearing, and that there's life outside of these prison walls. And it's no longer just a prison for them. You know, it's the women used to kill each other because they all literally sleep in, I don't know, the size of the stage, you would have 20 women all sleeping on the floor next to each other, and 2 women sharing a room is a bit much, but 20 all next to each other, can you imagine the fights they'd get into? So a lot of it is learn how to love the person next to you, you know, which is incredible because it's so intense. So my friend Anique, who brings her own children into these prisons because she's your people, so I don't have any worry about my children being here, and they're gorgeous little kids. She asks them, what can I do for you? So I know we're coming and, you know, we're teaching you crafts, and they're making crafts, and then my friend sells them and gives money back to these women so that they can make some sort of an income. But they were like, do you know what? We're not that interested in crafts. So she's been doing this for about 2 years, and they were like, okay. But what they asked her for was, will you help us have a church meeting every week here in prison? And she was like, yes, obviously. She was trying to do the Christian thing of like, I'm not going to force my religion on you, but I will make some crafts with you and hope for the best. Whereas they actually want to hear all about God. They want to have music and preaching and hearing about God in this courtyard there in a prison. And that's what it is, that God has made this place that in a human mind should be a place of darkness into a place of light. So they're there in what is a refuge to them and a place of hope, and women coming in for whatever reason, because some of the women were in prison for really frustrating things that they shouldn't be in prison for not being able to pay 15 euro in equivalent of legal fees. They were in prison for a year, and you're like, that's ridiculous. But they're in this place where they get to come away from wherever they are, and they hear about how much God loves them, and they hear about how free they are, and they get to have their lives be changed. And what I think is even more amazing is that God looks at these women and he saw how much he loved them, and he saw, I'm going to use these women to be a blessing to other people when they get back out of this prison to their own families. That's what I'm going to use them for. You know, Paul was described in the Bible as an ambassador in chains. I believe that that's definitely what these women are. They're ambassadors in chains. And Anik has had incredible favor with the prison guards, with the prison warden, because normally they wouldn't let people in and out of prisons with scissors, whereas they're just letting her in to do whatever, because they can see that these women's lives are being changed, and that meaning is being put on their lives, which I think is incredible. And that's the God that we have. And he knows that no matter where they are, they will always hear his thoughts. You know, it doesn't matter what circumstance in life are, it doesn't matter where you've been at with God or how far you've tried to run, or just even if you've gotten distracted, his thoughts are always his thoughts, and they're always there for you to almost glean them, you know. I heard a good description of it, of, you know, almost as being like a crumb that falls down from the Father's table. If you knew that that's what his thoughts were unto you, how loving they were. And then probably one of the most famous verses in the Bible, for you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. I love that we actually have quite a few little newborn babies in church this morning. I'm not going to talk too much about the womb, but it is a really fascinating thing that, like, little babies as they grow have everything they need. You know, it's the correct temperature, there's noise control, if they fall over, if their mums fall over, which happens a lot, they're perfectly safe. They have all the nutrients they need, all the water, all their oxygen. They have this wonderful thing for babies is rhythm. It's like one of the most important things you can introduce into your baby's life. I can see you rocking there in the back with a baby. That's the best thing you can do for children. They have everything they need in there. And that's the situation God wants to be in. When you're hemmed in with him in front and behind, you have all your needs met with him. I remember someone once gave me a verse, or not a verse, they gave me kind of a word from God saying, he has given you everything you could need. I know in work, particularly at the moment, there's lots of really stressful situations coming up, but I know I always go back to that. I have everything I need. It doesn't mean I don't stress, because I do, but that's incredible. My sister Naomi, who's a real worrier, on her last pregnancy, she also had a little baby called Samuel. She was told by doctors, we think your baby could have Down syndrome, and we're just going to run more tests. And so she was quite worried, and, you know, with your baby, she's like, I know I'm going to love them no matter what. But she was really going to God saying, you know, help me with this. You know, she didn't know yet. And she said that this was the chapter that got her through it, that I am fearfully and wonderfully made, and that God knit me together in my mother's womb. She was like, no matter the baby I have, that's a baby that God knit for me. You know, God spent all that time making these intricate details of their little nose and their little teeny tiny fingernails. They're so cute. And everything about them was just perfection to God. So regardless of the baby that's born, you know, whether they have a disability or they don't, or, you know, that's a baby God made for her. Her baby didn't end up being born with Down syndrome, but I think what she really realized was the baby she has is the baby God gave her, regardless of anything else. And that's incredible. You know what's amazing about babies, and I know I talk about them every time I do a sermon, but it's because it's something that God has made. And if you want to find out about God, you need to go and look at the things God has made. So you're never going to, like, well, not you're never going to, but it's unlikely you're going to find God from being in a city where things are loud and noisy and, you know, you're surrounded by people who just want to work and it's busy. If you, like, go up to the mountains, you know, have a look at what God makes and the things that are all just his, you'll find so much more in nature, the way David did. David grew up in nature. He grew up, you know, knowing exactly what the sheep were going to do, what the wolves were going to do, the different weather, how it might affect them. But all these things that God so perfectly made, that's the best way to discover who he is and in turn who you are as well. I read a really lovely quote, which was, before we were even born, we were under God's control and guardianship. So that's a lovely thought that I know, I don't think Jean is here, but one of the girls in our church is pregnant. Many of the girls in our church are pregnant. And her baby is under God's guardianship. The verse then goes on to say that my frame was hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. I love that, when I was being made in secret. You know, you watch those like one born every minute things and people like have a baby and they're like, I didn't even realize I was pregnant. And you're like, how did that happen? You're like 9 months pregnant, that's crazy. But apparently it happens a lot. We're made in secret. You know, often you don't know you're pregnant from the moment you're pregnant, because that would be crazy. But God does. He was in that first little moment. It's like if you're, you know, some people paint and some people write music. I don't like to show my music to people until I'm completely done. And I think God is like that. Until he's completely done, he doesn't like to reveal things to us. You know, with babies, most babies are born at full term. That's when he reveals them to you. And there's something really precious of that. God just wants to hide them away and protect them until they're all ready to face this world. And it's often when you go through really challenging things and you can't see a purpose in it, you know, and maybe you'll never see the purpose in it, because we are the ones under the microscope, not the one looking through the microscope. So we often don't get to see a perspective on it that God sees on it. But if you trust that God is that close to you, you will trust that he has this wider perspective on things. And you know, and it's really easy to say that, you know, and it's not easy to keep living through things when things are really challenging for you. But it's that verse that people say all the time, he who has begun a good work in you will see it through to completion. He has that perspective, that step back from everything. I've got you, so stop worrying. And then he goes on to say that every day of human existence has been written. Sorry, that was my version of that. he says, in your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me. Isn't that kind of cool that he like formed days for you? You know, it's nice when you have a nice day. It's not nice when you don't have a nice day. But he made days for you, that he put that much thought into you and your life, that he made this Sunday for you and whatever is found in it. And I think what's precious about that is it's stopping and saying, okay, what can I see of God in this day? Because there's something to be found in every day, you know? And we need to slow down sometimes. And I know I've been like, I hit like a wall of exhaustion with work because I didn't take any time off for like 6 months, which is a terrible idea. And I hit a wall of exhaustion, and I remember I just got to go and like on a walk, and it was the nicest thing in the world. And I just had like a whole day of ignoring other people and just spending a little bit of time with God. And it was just a chance to stop and see God. And you have to remind yourself to do that, because we don't. We just kind of get caught up with things. So stop and see God today in things. And if you can't see him, ask him to show himself to you. Okay. And then it goes on to, again, my favorite verse. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. When our thoughts are on God, when you're considering all of who God is, what do we have to fear and what do we have to be afraid of, you know, when we're looking back up at him. If we glimpse the thoughts of a loving God, then we will see that his thoughts are continuously on us. He guards us through the watches of the night. And it's like that when I was little, I knew, even when I woke up in the middle of the night and I'd had a nightmare, I remember distinctly praying, God, will you put an angel at the end of my bed to watch over me tonight because I feel really afraid. And I remember I'd always fall asleep every time feeling completely safe because God does, he places angels who are not like these pretty like little things beside us, but angels who are huge and protect us. And that's what he does to keep us safe. We have an amazingly thoughtful God. And then it goes on to these kind of strange verses. Well, I call them strange because they, you know, we have all these like lovely, you created my inward parts. And then David goes on being like, oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God, and men of blood depart from me. And you're like, whoo, that's a bit intense. He gets kind of like crazy. And I'm like, I don't know where that comes from. But I always compare it to mothers. You know, if you want to see the angry side to someone, insult their children. And you will see someone get fierce really, really quickly. David loves God so much that he is like, I hate people who hate you, basically. I'm like, I want everyone dead who doesn't like you. Because that's how much he loves God. So although it sounds really out of context in this chapter, it actually makes so much sense. The most fierce I ever see people is when they're protecting someone else, when it comes from a face of love. They literally are like, I will kill you if you touch my children. there is this amazing story of a... In Israel, they're all like almost everyone has to join the army. And so they're trained in hand-to-hand combat called Krav Maga. I got to do a course of it and it's really cool. but basically it's hand-to-hand combat, but you fight like literally with your bare hands and anything you can get your hands on to keep yourself safe. And so don't ever accidentally mess with an Israeli because they're probably trained in this. But there is this story in the news a few years ago of an Israeli mum, and she had three little kids, and she went to bed one night. Her husband was, I think he was off for the night anyway. And so she was on her own with her small kids, like really, really tiny. I think one of them was just a few months old. So puts the kids to bed, goes back into her room, falls asleep, and she hears a noise downstairs. Only, unlike me, who, like, the last time I heard that, I took out, like, a can of deodorant and, like, a tiny nail scissors and was like, I will fight you. Whereas she had, like, actual training. So this guy basically, came to murder her and her children. There's quite a few stories of things like that in Israel, unfortunately. But he came to kill her. But she was trained in Krav Maga. And she knew she had three small children to keep safe. And there was absolutely no way someone was going to touch her children. So she managed, I think she ended up being assaulted to a certain level, but managed. This guy ran out of her house because she went crazy. She went all mama bear on him. And he ran, and he ended up, very unfortunately for him, being shot by soldiers as he ran away. But the point was, nobody was going to touch her children. And that's the kind of relationship that David had with God. I don't want anyone to touch you, God. You know, he was being defensive of God who, you know, you're not going to touch God. But that's also a reflection of the way God is with us. He's mama bear with us. You know, nobody touches my children. And then we get to these last verses, which I love, because the last verses are a reflection of the first verses. And David says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. When David lies under that canopy of the vast thoughts of God, like stars in the sky above him, he's filled with wonder. He has heard and seen and smelt and touched and tasted who God is. When he's considered God, he knows that he's loved. When he knows God holds all things beginning and end in his hands. And so when he says to God, search me, O God, and know my heart, you know this imperfect person, know everything about me, and I'm okay with that. You know, when you start a relationship and you start falling in love with someone, you have to let them in to who you are. And I know this is very embarrassing. This is my boyfriend here, Sam. That was really hard for me. I'm quite an open person in some ways, but I don't really like people to know everything about me. So letting someone search you and know you, and now poor Sam has to listen to all my thoughts because I tell him everything and I don't filter. So it's probably very insulting half the time. And he says, and see if there be any grievous way in me. So like, tell me, God, if I am not getting things right with you, I need to know. And that's a really brave thing to say to God. See if there's anything, I guess, that could separate me from you, because he doesn't want anything that could get in that way. And then he says, and lead me in the way everlasting. So he's saying, and if there's anything that might be separating us, take it away from me, God, and let me put my life right with you, and let me just know you and love you and be with you, so that he can walk with him always, because he doesn't want to be apart from him. Until you realize that God is a God ruled by emotions, because that's who he is. He's not some far off being, but he totally does everything out of one emotion, which is love. You're never going to know him, and you're never going to get to know how much he thinks of you. And every thought of God that you get to hear is precious, and it's a treasure, and write them down. You know, if you realize something about God, and I definitely don't do this, but write them down so that on days when you can't remember who God is and you can't remember how you even feel about yourself, you can go and you can find all those treasures. The whole of you, the universe began, the whole of history and everything that God created began with the thoughts of God and the thought he had, and that thought came out of love. And all of existence rests on this big churning mind of God, from your next breath to a revolution in the Middle East that turns things over. Like, that's how many layers of thoughts he has. He might be thinking right now of you, but he's also thinking of everyone who you were born from, and every child you will ever have, and how that'll impact on another person. And not only that, but he's thinking of, you know, how the tide comes in and the waves, and how the universe is like, or how the earth is spinning. He's thinking of all of those things because his mind is ever turning, but he's just thinking of you right now. So this is what I want you to say: pursue God the way David pursued God. You know, it's not a big complex thing. For David, it was just spending time with God and thinking about God. You know, for getting away from everything, being in nature. When David was being pursued by Saul, he was up in these really cool these caves, and I went to visit it as well, and they're really cool. They're basically these mountains, and you'll see these tiny, from a distance, you'll see these tiny little kind of black dots, and they're literally caves all through these mountains, thousands of them. They haven't like excavated half of them. But David got to hide away in nature and know that he was being hemmed in by God, totally safe. And I think part of the reason that he was somewhere so far away was so he could always look at the stars, always wonder about God, and be secure that God had his hand on his shoulder. And this morning I just want to say that he's thinking about you, you know, no matter where you are. And I know for us as a church, we've been getting bigger and smaller, and lots of people have been moving on, but God is in all of that, and it's not something to fret and be worried about. You know, if you haven't been to church in a while, it's totally fine. God is still thinking about you, and his thoughts are with you, and there's a million and one reasons why we are somewhere and where we aren't somewhere, and God doesn't want you to be holding on to things. He just wants to love you and care about you this morning. So, Patrice, if you could sing that song, Holy Spirit, and I'm just going to pray, if that's okay. Is Rab here? Oh, there he is.